stop. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip, but he really could have devoured him. And from that point, then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
Episode 138, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chris Featherstone once again. Indeed, indeed, indeed. Pancakes and Power Slams. We are live on the air. We have a lot to talk about tonight. Derek, the Pancakes and Power Slams co-host, will be on the line not too long from now. But we have a lot to talk about. Of course, Raw was action-packed. And, of course, the flavor of the week is we're going to talk about Survivor Series 1996 to 2000. Hopefully we'll have enough time to talk about all of those years. We're going to talk about the first 4 years of we're going to talk about the first 13 years of Survivor Series this year. You know, maybe I'm sure we'll talk about Survivor Series down the line. And of course, next time Survivor Series comes around, we'll finish it. But, you know, of course, 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. I also said that last week that we only got, I think, 2 years, 2 years in. We got 91 to 93, so we got technically 3 years in. And so we're going to talk about 94, 95 here in a minute as well. Again, 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. Raw was a very, very action-packed episode. It was just a lot of commotion within Team Cena and Team Authority. Of course, the Authority was talking about how they are going to decimate Team Cena to leave only John Cena standing at the end. We saw that, and we also saw some changes as well. So I'm excited to, you know, talk about the Raw. And, of course, we have the, as always, we have the Survivor Series predictions. We do predictions all the time here on the show before the pay-per-views. So this time will be no different. Again, we have it right now, and it will. And feel free to chime in. Of course, the WeAreWrestling.net streaming live on the show, as well as through Facebook at on Crave Wrestling, and of course Twitter at Crave Wrestling. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know what you thought about Raw. Live to be said on the air. Now, ladies and gentlemen, before we get into Raw, of course we have trivia all the time, and we're going to continue to do that. But let us know your thoughts. Let us know your thoughts on just the 138 episodes of Pancakes and Power Slams. Let us know what you think. And one thing that I am very, very grateful of is that it just continues to go higher and higher. The numbers are looking awesome, and the interviews are just coming more and more and more. I have a big announcement, another interview coming. We've had many people in the Pancakes and Power Slam series. But right now, I am pleased to announce that on December the 2nd, on episode number 140, we will celebrate 140 episodes of Pancakes and Power Slams with Ring of Honor rising star Moose. Moose will be on the show live, will be on the Pancakes and Power Slams show live and in living color, if you will, on episode 140. So 140 episodes, very milestone episode. So we definitely wanted to celebrate the 140th episode of Pancakes and Power Slams in 2 weeks by having an interview. And what better person to come on Pancakes and Power Slams than Moose? I really like this guy. He's an awesome guy. Ended up meeting him in person, and he's a really cool guy. And I really like the humble spirit that he has. And he's a huge guy, and you know, of course, former football player, and just continuing to turn some heads and really demand some attention in Ring of Honor at this point. Of course, for all of us who watch Ring of Honor, we know that he is currently teaming up with R.D. Evans, and of course Vita Scott is their manager, and just continuing to rise up the ladder in Ring of Honor. And I'm really excited to talk to him regarding his football career and just his passion to endeavor into the art and heart of pro wrestling, and just what his goals and aspirations is to, you know, to be in the future as a wrestler. So really excited to interview Moose, and episode 140 we will have him on the show. We've got some other interviews coming up as well, so be sure to, of course, we give you time to announce we give time to announce interviews once they are done in advance. But there's been many a times where there'll be indie shows that gives me emails and want to have someone promote another indie show on the show, and I am 100% behind that. I absolutely love that. For people who know me well, who only know me enough within this past 2.5 years of the episode, over 2.5 years now, you all know that I'm a big fan of promoting other people's stuff. And so there's been people that I've worked hard to get here in 138 episodes in 2.5 years. I've worked hard. However, it would be ridiculous of me not to appreciate the opportunities that I've had from Bleacher Report and from Wrestling Inc. and from We Are Wrestling. Speaking of We Are Wrestling, they appreciated my writing in Wrestling Inc. and just welcomed me in open arms and asked me to be a part of the family. And hey, listen, I didn't even hesitate to say yes, because I stuff like that I'm humbled by. I'm the type of person that don't think I deserve anything in the world or anybody owes me anything. I'm humbled by opportunities for people to appreciate my contribution anywhere, and specifically in the wrestling world. So I'm excited. I'm really excited about just partner up with WeAreWrestling.net and continuing to partner up with just different avenues. Of course, the Bleacher Report has done wonders in my journalism and writing career, specifically from a pro wrestling standpoint. And all of those who follow me on Bleacher Report know that I also write, football articles as well. I'm a big Ohio State fan, Ohio State football fan. And also I write basketball articles too. I'm a big Chicago Bulls fan. So, follow my work over at Bleacher Report. I've been writing for them for about over 2.5 years now as well. And I've got over 5 million reads. See, stuff like that is what I'm talking about. I'm the type of person who don't think that everybody should look at my stuff and the world owes me 5 million reads. No, every single person, I don't care if I disagree with you or agree with you, every single person who looks at my articles, who comments, especially comments, I'm so humbled and so thankful for. I remember that I wrote my most controversial article to date was an article that was just not happy about people chanting CM Punk. I was very upset. It was one day that I was just doing some work with some writing and some reporting, and I was just randomly upset about why people continue to chant CM Punk's name. And I wrote an article about it, and man, that article, it lasted for weeks after that. I had tweets and all types of messages, weeks and weeks and weeks after that article, from both ends, from both extremist CM Punk marks and also people who were 100% on my side as far as just agreeing with what I said. I mean, of course, there was a bit of a bias there as far as people chanting CM Punk, but at the same time, you know, I wrote it from an editorial standpoint, and people who don't understand journalism, don't really see stuff like that. They don't really get stuff like that. And I think it's important for people to realize how, you know, the art of writing editorials. I mean, that's a part of journalism, is writing editorials. If you don't agree with my editorials, that's absolutely fine. But to scoff and to criticize and to demean, you know, that's just very unfortunate that people would resort to that measure because a journalist do not agree with their view. So, very interesting article that I wrote. But check out my archive. I was just checking out my archive on Bleacher Report about that was not too long ago, probably a week or two ago, and I was just kind of in awe about, like, wow, there was some pretty good articles that I've written. I'm over 200 now. I don't know the exact number, but over 200 articles right now. So, and just continue to support Pancakes and Power Slams. We, you know, this is amazing stuff here. All the people who support Pancakes and Power Slams, WeAreWrestling.net streaming it live, and just all the people who have really invested time into making Pancakes and Power Slams a success. I'm, you know, you guys are the reason why I continue to, you know, come to the studio at 11 o'clock at night every week live and do what I do, because that's what I do. And I love it, and it's fun, and I look forward to it every single week. And I have a very, very, very busy, busy schedule. And, you know, to have a live show at 11 p.m. every week, you know, it's not easy when you have a very hectic schedule. But at the same time, it's a step away from the hectic schedule. So it works. No matter what, it works, because I'm just excited to talk wrestling every single week on my platform, my show, my way, my rules. But I'm a nice guy who is a strong man of faith, and so I keep it a way that's is pleasing to the ears. So, but at the same time, we're edgy here. We talk wrestling. We rant. We do things that causes people to continue to want to listen to our show. I get positive reviews all the time, and I'm very, very happy and very, very thankful of everyone who continuing to listen to the show. So before we get into Raw, we're going to randomly talk about Survivor Series, and we're going to talk about some a random topic. So from A to Z, someone hurry up and tweet me something about something to talk to before we get into Raw. Let's see here. Okay, so Sean Mooney. All right, very random name there. So Sean Mooney. Thank you. Thank you very much. WeAreWrestling.net. Mom, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Said it is a good show. And I'm very thankful. I've had people, I've had people want me to be featured on their shows. I've had people who wrote wrestling books ask me to be a part of their wrestling book as a person that they interviewed. I mean, stuff like that is just so humbling and so amazing to me. For people who know me know that I'm very modest and I'm thankful and I love to really communicate with people. I love to write. I love to speak, public speak. I'm a certified life coach, and so I love to really impact people. And out of all the impact that I make just on a daily basis, you know, one thing that keeps me grounded so much is that these people are listening. These people are paying attention. These people are thankful for my contribution to them. And so specific to the wrestling, to the pro wrestling community, I feel the same way. I mean, I've been watching wrestling my entire life, my whole life. I remember when my great grandma was living. She was, she was elderly, but she was in a cane, and she would pay attention and listen and sit in her chair, in her recliner chair. And my brother and I, my brother is just a year younger than I am, she would put pro wrestling on the TV right in front of us, and this is the early 80s, and she would put pro wrestling on the TV in front of us, and we literally grew up watching professional wrestling. I mean, because of my great-grandma, who was in her 70s at the time, being an avid pro wrestling fan is the reason why I watched and continue to watch and will watch pro wrestling. She passed away in 1995, and man, it was absolutely amazing that her, as a 70-year-old woman, watching pro wrestling is what is keeping me to watch pro wrestling, and nobody else in my family, in my immediate family, nobody else in my family watches pro wrestling, and I'm the only one. My brother stopped watching pro wrestling a long, long, long time ago, but there was just something about pro wrestling that they want to continue to. Well, it's funny that there's something about pro wrestling that made me want to continue to watch it and be just immersed in the pro wrestling community, and I'm glad that I made that decision. I'm glad that I'm immersed in the pro wrestling community because it's an awesome community to talk about. And people know that I'm an avid sports fan. I absolutely love sports. So it's awesome. And so there's my time to really thank everyone. The show usually every week is so packed, and sometimes you get so, you pay so much attention to the show that you pay attention so much to the show that you forget to thank the people who got you there. And I vow not to do that. So speaking of live streaming, We got some feedback here in the stream here, the live stream. There's people dual screening and things like that. Let's go over to whatever screen that's going on. This is regarding the RealWrestling.net community comment screen here. Hey, promote people to come over to the thread of Pancakes and Power Slams. I've got an arsenal of trivia waiting to happen. So everybody who's in this thread right now, dual screen, keep dual screening. So I thank you very much. But go over to whatever, you know, hot topic is going on right now and push people to come over to the Pancakes and Power Slams thread so we can have some good trivia from the WeAreWrestling.net stream. So I want to do a Twitter, Facebook, and WeAreWrestling.net. Usually we get some good Twitter answers as well. But we usually, you know, there's been a few times where we've had some good competition on the live stream over at WeAreWrestling.net. So everybody's listening to the show. It's out on Twitter right now. Be sure to retweet or do whatever. Let's help each other and let's continue to push this show into new heights. So for those who didn't hear me in the beginning, the 140th episode is December the 2nd, and we are featuring Ring of Honor star Moose. Moose will be our special guest for the 140th episode. So I'm really, really excited, really, 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 really happy to interview Moose for the show. It's going to be really, really fun. So with that being said, like I said before, promote everyone to come over to the Pancakes and Power Slams thread. We're going to have some trivia coming up. And we also have Raw Talk and SmackDown predictions. So let us know your SmackDown predictions. And, of course, the flavor of the week this week is Survivor Series 1996 to 2000. And we're going to talk about 94 and 95 before, because we ran out of time last week. So real quick, 1994 Survivor Series, it was really the emergence of Owen Hart, and it was the submission match for WWE Championship at the time, and Bob Backlund. It was the emergence of Owen Hart because Owen Hart really, you know, he made the turn before that. I believe it was the year before is when he teased the turn and really kind of stepped away from being under the shadow of Bret Hart. And of course, I believe it was Royal Rumble of 1994. When, we heard it was the kick heard around the world, and, it's one of those things that Owen Hart said, that kick, Brett, it felt good, Brett. It felt good, that kick, and just the heel, that's what was so amazing about heel turns 20 years ago, because it was built amazingly. The turn was teased at the Survivor Series of 93, and then it was a tag team match. And the Harts they had their tag team match at Royal Rumble 1994, and Owen Hart was just so upset about being under the shadow of Bret Hart that the heel turn came from a kick. That is absolutely amazing to me. And just building heel turns, it took a good 2 months, and it was even before that, really, but it really started to unveil at Survivor Series of 93, and then Owen made the turn in 94 and accompanied Bob Backlund, who was another name that had an amazing resurgence over at in 1994. And of course, the heel Bob Backlund, who really made the crossface chicken wing such a crazy heelish move at the time. Bob Backlund in 1994. I mean, talk about your, you know, 15 years in the making. You know, making a 15-year comeback almost, and becoming the, you know, his champ long time before then, and come back for another run in 94. Who would have thought that Bob Backlund, out of anyone, would have made such an amazing return? And I, and that's actually a pretty good it's actually a pretty good article for Bleacher Report as far as you know, top comebacks. I think it's an amazing. I mean, and be sure to, you know, on the live thread, Real Wrestling, or on Twitter at Crave Wrestling. You know, if you have some top 10 comebacks, if you want to just you know, tell me on Twitter or on wearewrestling.net, you know, feel free to do so. And I, of course, I would let it accompany with your Twitter handle, and I will give you credit on the I will give you credit on the article. So be sure to do that if you'd like. But yeah, Bob Backlund was certainly one of those top 10 comebacks in WWE history because of his emergence in 94 with the heel, with just being mentally unstable, with the cross-faced chicken wing. And I mean, he was just some cookie cutter babyface. And then, you know, he was having some good matches with Bret Hart and just snapped. I mean, that's amazing, amazing television, amazing storylines. And also at Survivor Series 94 was the casket match with Chuck Norris, with The Undertaker defeating Yokozuna. Million Dollar Team defeating Guts and Glory. So basically it was Lex Luger versus Ted DiBiase. The Guts and Glory had Lex Luger, Mabel, Adam Bomb, Billy Gunn, and Bart Gunn. And, of course, the Million Dollar Team was managed by Ted DiBiase. They had Heavenly Bodies. They had Bam Bam Bigelow, King Kong Bundy, and Tatanka. And the Doink and Jerry Lawler had just probably one of the worst, in my opinion, one of the worst one of the worst Survivor Series. Man, oh, really good comment here. Goldust is another top 10 comeback for sure. Absolutely. I totally, totally agree. John Crisp over at the WeAreWrestling.net stream made that. It was really cool. I totally agree. Goldust is absolutely, at least, as he mentioned, at least an honorable mention in the top 10 comebacks. Totally agree with that. And on the contrast, someone mentioned that the Warrior had one of the worst comebacks in wrestling history, which I agree with too, because both of his comebacks were pretty lackluster. Post SummerSlam and also his comeback around when he was feuding with Triple H, I believe that was 96, if I'm not mistaken, or 97. Yeah, so, and then to finish off with Survivor Series, so the Royal Family was Jerry Lawler and Sleazy, Cheesy, and Queasy. They defeated Doink, Dink, Pink, and Wink. And then Razor Ramon's team defeated Shawn Michaels' team. Shawn Michaels had Diesel, Owen, Jim Neidhart, and Jeff Jarrett. The Bad Guys had the Head Shrinkers and the British Bulldog, 1-2-3 Kid, and of course Razor Ramon. In the 95 Rumble, 95 Rumble was Diesel and Shawn Michaels really having an opportunity to really show their, just kind of really headline it, but Bret Hart beat Diesel in a no DQ match and won the WWE Championship. And but Shawn Michaels won, though. Team Michaels defeated Team Yokozuna. Yokozuna had Razor Ramon, Owen, and Dean Douglas. And so it was Yokozuna, Razor Ramon, Dean Douglas, and Owen Hart. And then Team Michaels had Ahmed Johnson, Psycho Sid, the British Bulldog, and Shawn Michaels. It was kind of one of those, it was kind of an odd pairing team, kind of like Strange Bedfellows type of thing. And then the Dark Side defeated the Royals. The Royals had King Mabel, Lawler, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, and Isaac Yankem, DDS. And then Dark Side had The Undertaker, Savio Vega, Fatu, and Henry Godwin. And then also Goldust defeated Bam Bam Bigelow. That was his debut. Speaking of Goldust, 1995 was his pay-per-view debut, and I was quite awesome. Kurt Hennig, that's an interesting comeback as well. Kurt Hennig back in 2002. I think what was surprising about Hennig was that he was in the top, that, you know, he was in one of the finalists of the Royal Rumble of that year, and he ended up doing pretty well. And then of course the plane ride from hell kind of really tainted his 2002. Pretty jacked him up pretty well, pretty bad. And I don't think, of course, he would have been in world title contention, but it was a really, really good comeback. And then another one was British Bulldog's comeback in 99. I don't think Bulldog's comeback in 99 was that bad. One thing that I didn't like about British Bulldog was the dude wore pants. That's absolutely ridiculous. He actually was in the main event. I think it was like the six-pack challenge or something like that. I'm trying to figure out what main event that was, that he was in like the six-pack challenge or something like that. I'm sure that someone will let me know. I'll figure it out. I don't remember exactly what it was, what pay-per-view it was, but British Bulldog, I think it was Unforgiven 99. That's what it was. It was Unforgiven of 99. And the six-pack challenge was Bulldog. There was also like Rock, Mankind, Big Show, Kane, and Triple H. That's what it was. The six-pack challenge that he was in. So, he was main eventing when he came back in 99 as opposed to, you know, just being, you know, a regular person, you know, just a kind of a main event guy, you know, before he came back. But the good thing about that is that he actually had an opportunity to kind of revive his career, because before he came back in 99, he got in some really bad shape, and I think he was wrestling as he was teaming up with Jim Neidhart, and I think Jim Neidhart was called like Who or something like that, and it was just really bad. He was just in really bad shape when he went over to WCW before he came back. So he got himself back in good shape, so that was good. And he also, you know, made the decision to at least take what he got. But just wearing the pants is really got me. That was really, really awkward to me. Absolutely, really, really awkward. Interesting comment here as far as Owen Hart being one of the most underrated heels. The comment says, wish they would have kept the Black Hart gimmick instead of putting him with Jeff Jarrett and giving him a Blue Blazer gimmick. I agree with that. I think the Black Hart gimmick was really cool. It was kind of, he played like a tweener type of thing, and when he was a Black Hart, Owen Hart, it showed more of a darker side to him that was that gave him a little bit more character than just him being an amazing wrestler. So I think that's a good observation there. And of course the Body Donnas and Survivor Series 95, they defeated the underdogs. The underdogs was Marty Jannetty, Bob Holly, Hakushi, and Barry Horowitz. And then the Body Donnas had Rad Rafford, Skip, Zip, and 1-2-3 Kid. Of course, Rad Radford, many of us know him from ECW, being Louis Spicoli. So, and then, so 95 was a very interesting Survivor Series. Really started to bring back, you know, like 92-ish really broke away from the 4-on-4s, but the 4-on-4s started to come back again in the mid-90s, and so I was cool with that. So that's 94, 95, and we're going to get started here with the Raw Talk, and we'll bring Derek on here in just a minute. We'll be right back.
Bring what you got. The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at it.
Four corners, free, on mine. Let's go. The whole squad is making it clear we've taken this year. You know who we are, but you don't know why we're here. So this is where the big boys play. These big boys play like who defies the living God? Get out the big boys' way. Outsiders with the swoop in. We live as kings, you see in us. But our third man waits in the wings. And when the time is right, we shock him with the proper attack. I go for Dolo, but ain't solo. Cut the promo in black. Hollywood, Hendrix, Frizzle, pinning them to the mat.
And I'm Dash One Nation with the strength of 100 men, with one intent to see the will fulfilled of the one who sent his son to give himself. But you rap about your gas and your rags torture, white coffins when I drop a bomb. My mic's awesome, never lost faith. You in all space, you can all skate, suffer but never crippled. No bin walls in my cross face. From here to Saturday, raving, anticipating. I was frostbit, now I am glacier, mixed with some Vader. Get to hawking with these animals, using God for my defense. In Alabama, we jamming. That's beautiful, Bobby Eaton, me and Priest. We the dangerous alliance, nah, the Harlem Heat. Tie the do-rag before we do battle. You're talking sheep, you all what you speak. That's too sweet.
Till the genre is took back, we reppin' that wolf pack. The foundation shaking, no mistaking, yeah, we shook that. Trust in God, we trust, pushing forward, never look back. Meekness ain't at all weakness, some people mistook that. Stamping out this crook rap, he turning the power on the razor's edge, leg drop after a power bomb. Tired of the lies, man, we bringing the truth through. Diligent and fruitful, the owners in our group too. It's good to be king, sold out, this war is brutal.
We playing them war games, our army go move too. You crew, I'm in the Raptors with a bat in my hand, and stand to shatter all your plans so they don't matter. In the grand scheme, it's that easy. We tag teaming, Steiner brothers, we love it. Demand the win, establish it, this the clash of the champions.
This is where the big boys play, huh? We ain't here to play.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back after a brief pause. Raw Talk is here. Raw Talk is live. And as well as Derek, our Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent, co-host, good to have you tonight, sir.
We are here. We're live. This is Pancakes and Power Slams, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Derek, the Raw correspondent, the Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent. I specialize in Raw a bit. Last night's Raw was typical Raw for you. It wasn't too big, too small. I mean, we saw a title change hands. We saw a another addition to the Survivor Series as far as the team match goes. So it had its ups and downs. But we're going to get to that. But everybody, 347-884-52. This is Pancakes and Power Slams. The new Tuesday Night Titans. Dusty Rhodes stops by all the time. I think he might be here now. Dusty, you are here?
Yes, sir, I'm here. We are live and living color, getting funky like a monkey, if you will.
Exactly. I mean, we've got everything here. This is Pancakes and Power Slams. This is where you need to be Tuesday night. We're going to talk about Monday Night Raw. The Authority walks out. Chris, what happened?
Yes, the Authority walks out and Ryback appears on stage. Stephanie makes another pitch for Ryback to not be on Team Cena. And, and it really boils down to them really centralizing a lot, putting a lot of investment into Ryback, which it was really, really interesting that they are doing this. And I hope that they don't mess it up this time. I really, really don't hope that they don't mess it up this time, because I think that they're doing good, and the fans are back on the Feed Me More chance. So there's the ability to run with it. There's the ability to really use it and capture the moment again. You jacked it up exactly 2 years ago in 2012 when the Shield came and jacked up Ryback and just decimated his character, just halted any type of steam and momentum that he was building. 2 years later, Feed Me More chance. He's a babyface again, and here you go, the big guy. And I think it was good to kind of, you know, bring him and just kind of centralize on trying to make a pitch of John Cena, just really disparaging him and giving him slightful comments and playing some old school stuff from a couple years ago. That was pretty funny. So I was, you know, well, from about a year and a half ago, I was okay with the opening segment.
Yeah, it was okay. And, you know, it's the thing about Ryback, it does feel like 2 years ago when Ryback came onto the scene. Everyone's getting pumped, and the WWE pumped them, and really had gassy matches and didn't really fulfill what they were going to do. They're trying to do that again. But the thing is, I mean, that's great for Ryback, but what's Ryback going to do after he's done with Team Cena, Survivor Series is over? I mean, what's in store for Ryback? I mean, are they going to continue to build him the way that they should have at the beginning, or is it going to go back to what it was? He becomes kind of comedy relief, dopey, Big Show type of character. So, I mean, it's really, after Team Cena, that's when, what are we going to see from Ryback?
The big guy. All right, trivia question. How can we go 42 minutes into the show without trivia question? It was really a good conversation, by the way. And thank you all, everyone on RealWrestling.net stream who, you know, said some good things about just me appreciating, just really, really appreciating everyone's amazing support and amazing effort. And real quick, 1993 Survivor Series. I'm gonna touch into that real quick. We did 94 and 95. 1993 was the All Americans defeating the Foreign Fanatics. That was a pretty good, interesting main event there. And then Smoky Mountain Wrestling had some love in 1993 when the Heavenly Bodies with your boy Jim Cornette defeating the Rock and Roll Express to become the Smoky Mountain Tag Team Champions. So, and of course, like I mentioned, the Hart family defeating the Shawn Michaels and his Knights, and really the spark of the turn from Owen Hart, and then Marty Jannetty, Randy Savage, Razor Ramon, 1-2-3 Kid defeating IRS, Diesel, Rick Martel, and Adam Bomb. I was surprised that was the opener. It was the second, it was the third longest match of the night. And then the Doinks defeating the four Doinks. When Mabel dressed as one of the worst moments ever, when he dressed up as when he was Man on the Mission, that was quite an interesting thing to see, to say the least. But the good part of that is at least his team won. It was Man on the Mission Doinks and the Bushwhacker Doinks defeating the Head Shrinkers, Bash and Booger, and Bam Bam Bigelow. So pretty interesting gimmick-heavy 1993 Survivor Series.
Yeah, very gimmick-heavy. It was a good Survivor Series. I mean, you had the All-Americans, and the only time you ever see, like, Lex Luger and The Undertaker and the Steiners all in the same ring together. But, you know, it was gimmicky. It was very early 90s heavy as far as the pay-per-view goes. But I'm not going to discredit and say it was the worst one. It definitely wasn't. So.
No. Kudos. No, I agree with that.
Drinking my crystal clear Pepsi. Remember that stuff?
Yeah, I remember the crystal clear Pepsis. Wow, that's a blast from the past. Talk about you products trying to innovate some type of really catchy. You know, thankfully Pepsi's one of the most one of the top and most lucrative businesses in the world, for them to just unveil products that had not worked so well, that was one of them. So at the time, it was pretty good, but in hindsight, not so much. First question of the night, really interesting that I'm going this far without asking a question. How about that? Oh, yeah. How about Survivor Series 95 when Undertaker came back with an awesome mask after being crushed by Mabel, King Mabel? That was quite interesting mask that the Undertaker had. All right, question here, trivia question. What WWE Hall of Famer also had a gimmick named the Midnight Rider? What WWE Hall of Famer also had a gimmick named the Midnight Rider? Next on Raw, we have Triple H, saying that he's going to decimate Team Cena, and the first sign of decimation that we experienced was Dolph Ziggler losing the Intercontinental Championship. Now, I am not okay with this. I think it's horrible. I absolutely think it's horrible. Why? Because not necessarily because Luke Harper winning the Intercontinental Championship, although I think that there's a list of people that should have been in front of Luke Harper. Granted, Luke Harper, for his size, really, really, really good athlete. But you break away from the Wyatt family, and, a couple of weeks in and some vignettes, you become the Intercontinental Champion. I don't agree with that. I think you need to work your way up. I know he's been around for a while. He was in the Indies when he's been around for a while when he was Brody Lee in the Indies. But I think that just work your way up and build. If you want him to win the Intercontinental Championship, give it a proper build. Otherwise, his reign just reeks of transitional champion. And they're bouncing this title around to guys who need a proper build. And I didn't like the decision. It seemed so rushed. It wasn't a proper build with it, and I was totally opposed to it.
I didn't like it either. I mean, it's like Dolph Ziggler. I mean, he's got to stay prominent, especially being on Team Cena, and just him losing. I can see where that adds a stiff to make the Authority look even bigger and badder. But it was kind of useless. And it was, again, now he's going to go forever in the annals of history of the Intercontinental Championship title as being a title holder at this certain date, at his point in his career. And we'll see how long he holds on. I mean, if he holds on to it for 2 or 3 years, okay, well, that's great. Or if he has like a CM Punk reign of having the title. But again, it was like a useless win. He didn't really gain from it. And Dolph Ziggler, I don't know if he was really hurt too much by it. I mean, he's already lost it once to Miz. So, yeah, it was kind of in bad taste. Didn't care for it. I don't really think it does too much for either one.
No, it doesn't. Good job on the thread. Dusty Rhodes is the correct answer. He was the Midnight Rider. And real quick to address a question that was posed, what's wrong with a title change? Good for Harper. See, that's the thing. That's what's wrong with the title change. It's much more than just winning a title. And this is me. This is a subjective view from a traditionalist wrestling fan that still believe that titles can really help people's career. I think people make titles. I don't think titles make people. You can't just slap a title on someone and expect them to run with it. I mean, we've seen that many, many times. I mean, no disrespect to Kofi Kingston. He's an amazing athlete, but he's had almost 10 mid-card title reigns. That's my point. He's had almost 10 mid-card title reigns, and he still is not any different than what he was 7 years ago. Not any different. I think probably 2007, maybe 2009, it was 2009 when he won the Survivor Series match when he defeated Randy Orton and CM Punk. And So that was 5 years ago. And he's been, I think he, I think it was like 7 years. I think it was 2007 that he debuted for the East, for the WWE. He debuted in ECW. And I think CM Punk was around that time too. So, yeah, it was, I just don't understand why you just slap mid-card titles. You just can't just slap a mid-card title on someone and expect them to do anything with it. The amazing thing about mid-card champions in the 80s and the 90s, the person was so red-hot that you had no choice but to give him a title. Ultimate Warrior is a perfect example. You gave him an Intercontinental Championship because the guy was red hot in the late 80s. No choice but to give him a mid-card championship. That's what really created his legacy as a Hall of Famer, is what he is now. And so Luke Harper, again, a really, really, really good athlete. Like I said, I followed him when he was Brody Lee in the Indies. Really good athlete. But just to slap a title on him, absolutely, I disagree with that. Tyson Kidd defeating Adam Rose. I think we said before, and I don't know if you agree with it, but I'm okay with the Adam Rose change of character. I think the every week party time all the time was getting a little bit redundant, a little bit stale. So this does two things. It finally reveals the bunny soon, and it also gives Adam Rose a heel persona that is going to be funny to see how he's going to do it. It seems like he's going to do it kind of snarky and very facetious, still dancing with the Rosebud. So it'll be interesting to see that, because he was getting quite stale. We've mentioned him on the show. I tried my best to keep holding on to liking Adam Rose because my son likes him, but I think I'm good. But the good news is I'm starting to like Adam Rose's change of character, and I'm interested to see how far this goes.
Yeah, I mean, he needs something for sure, and he's going to get stale and fall off the face of the earth in the WWE universe. I don't disagree. I mean, yeah, he's got to do something. I mean, there's got to be something done for him, or he's going to end up like a certain my boy that's not around too much anymore. But it's something. I don't know. Is this going to save Adam, or is this going to make him? It's going to make him more of a not so one dimensional as far as party time, excellent Wayne's World. Woo woo woo!
Right.
I'm
not worthy.
We're not worthy. He needs something, so this could be a good turn. I mean, he's got nothing to lose. I mean, honestly, so I can see this jump being kind of good for him. But again, are that many people going to be interested?
Probably not. Next, we have Bray Wyatt in-ring promo. Dean Ambrose talks on Titantron, tricks Wyatt, and attacks him from behind. I mean, like I've said before, I don't see a payoff with this. I just don't. We'll have a good match at Survivor Series. That's without question. But what's the payoff of a Dean Ambrose versus Bray Wyatt feud? And I agree with what Vince Russo said before, when he was talking about a week or two ago. He was mentioning on his website about Bray Wyatt and Dean Ambrose. He was talking about how Dean Ambrose's character needs to be protected. And I don't think, and we'll get to predictions here at the end of the show, but I don't know if it's WWE's mission. I don't think it's their project to protect Dean Ambrose. And I think the Dean Ambrose character needs a lot more treatment, needs a lot more protection, needs a lot more investment than Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt's had his opportunity. He's been there for over a year now, and he's not any different than when he was 15 months ago. So now it's time for Dean Ambrose to really shine. It's for them to – he's one of the top baby faces now. Give him the opportunity to be the man for the WWE, and if he beats Bray Wyatt clean, I think that it would be – I think that that would serve the best purpose for this feud. Otherwise, if we just see Bray Wyatt beat Dean Ambrose, it would be pointless to me.
Yeah, it would be pointless. And I mean, I don't know what they want to do with these two. It's like they're almost stuck in a stalemate. I mean, Ambrose is on fire, I mean, for the most part. He's got enough momentum behind him as far as his character to be protected. But yeah, if Bray Wyatt comes in, defeats him, it kind of just puts everything to a stalemate. It's going to kind of ruin the Dean Ambrose hype that has behind him. But same thing, Bray Wyatt, he's had this hype. And granted, he's lost a few times. But you're right, he hasn't been any different in the past year. And it's kind of mismanagement, misbooking. But, I mean, it's like who's going to lose this match? Whoever's going to lose that match, if it's lost cleanly by a pin or a submission or whatever, it's going to be a notch in that character's development almost. So.
Interesting comment here. I think it kills Bray Wyatt though if Ambrose wins cleanly. He's just stalled. But that's my issue though. That's the reason why I don't know if a Bray Wyatt Dean Ambrose feud was best right now, because I think that's a good point that was made, but I don't think either of their gimmicks are worthy to lose right now, because Bray Wyatt's there's been many opportunities for him to be a top guy, and it just has not worked. However, Ambrose, he broke away from the Shield. And, you know, it's only been a few months, and so now's the time to really – I think the investment should be more in Ambrose than Wyatt, because Bray Wyatt's had multiple opportunities. Even, you know, wrestled a WrestleMania match, a singles WrestleMania match against John Cena. So they've definitely put some investment in Bray Wyatt. And now it's the time to put that investment in Dean Ambrose. Next, we have Ryback defeating Cesaro. I think this was a decent match. The only thing I noticed about Ryback, and I like the fact that they're pushing him, I like the fact that they're giving him some love and giving him an opportunity. I definitely think that Ryback needs to really improve in the stamina area. After about 4 minutes, it was really, really rough for me to watch that match. Cesaro, I tell you what, thank God that Cesaro really is an amazing athlete, is an amazing wrestler, because he really, really, really covered the weaknesses of Ryback. You can tell that he was gassed out. And if you really want to push Ryback as a face, as one of the top faces, you need that guy. I mean, of course he lives in the gym. He's ripped to shreds. But at the same time, man, he needs to spend a little bit more time on those ellipticals for sure.
Yeah, and it almost reminds me of like the Ultimate Warrior when it was all stamina in the first couple minutes. After that, it was kind of dud. But, the thing with Ryback, but kind of like the WWE kind of needs him. But, again, I just don't know if they know at the end of the day what to do with him. He's good for in the moment. But once he's out there a few minutes, you're kind of lost, and you're like, well, okay. So, it's hard to say. I mean, Cesaro all around. I mean, he's an awesome talent. He's an awesome athlete. And I kind of like, we'll get to it later, how he kind of snubbed somebody towards the end of Raw. And that was funny to me. But anyway, we'll get to that. What else you got for us? What happened next?
Well, before we get to that, next trivia question on deck is, what longstanding patriotic babyface joined Team Canada? Who would dare do that? Who would dare join Team Canada? Who's that guy that was a long-standing patriotic babyface? Speaking of getting lost, you were talking about with Ryback. I was lost with Rusev and Heath Slater. What in the world was that about?
Yeah. They're trying again with Heath Slater. What are they going to do with him? I'm surprised he's even still there, and I hate to say that about people because everyone, you know, once you're in the WWE, that's your spot. That's what you want to do for the rest of your career. Yeah. But it's 3MB didn't work. I mean, he's been around for a few years now, and what are they trying to do? I mean, obviously he got his little, you know, quick pop, but in the long run, I mean, it was nothing. It was kind of a throwaway waste of a time. I mean, what's Slater going to do against Rusev? I'm seriously.
Yeah, exactly. And the guy's a heel. Typically, when he's with Titus O'Neil with Slater Gator. So, I mean, talk about flip flop. I was really surprised that they decided to keep. I mean, you know, couple good comments here. Bigger muscles tire quicker. They need more oxygen. I think that's a good point. Yeah, but here's the thing. I'm a certified personal trainer, so I'm definitely there's definitely a lot of bigger guys, and I've worked in fitness for 10 years, and there's definitely bigger guys who has stamina. I mean, of course. A lot of guys who are bigger, they spend most of their time doing strength and weight training, but that doesn't give someone the opportunity to stop doing cardiovascular training. I think a lot of guys with big muscles and are, you know, just really big, huge people, their stamina is just horrible, you know. So... Yeah, I think it's a good point to mention, but I certainly don't think that people should stop doing it for sure. But real quick, another mention here is which Team Canada, the Team Canada and WCW, the Lance Storm leading Team Canada. And next we have Big Show and Sheamus. Now, Big Show comes out, and then Stephanie comes out and offers him a spot in the 2015 Hall of Fame. So that was pretty interesting. If he left Team Cena, and I'm thinking in my head, like, away from kayfabe, like, how in the world could you kayfabe that? There's no – so you're going to turn down – being in the 2015 Hall of Fame to be on Team Cena, yeah, that makes a ton of sense. So Sheamus comes out, tries to, you know, convince Big Show otherwise somehow, and then leads to a match between them two, and then Rusev and Mark Henry comes out and takes them out. So that was a very weird type of beginning to that match. Who in the world would reject being an active wrestler and in the 2015 Hall of Fame? That was absolutely ridiculous. And real quick before you comment, Derek, yes, Jim Dugan is the correct answer. Good job. And again, after every now and then, I have to refresh the explanation of why we do that. There was one time Derek and I were watching the. We both live in the Ohio area, and you know, we talk wrestling and hang out, you know, every now and then, and watch some old wrestling videos, and we watched the Mid-South video that I bought, and we were watching it over at Derek's place, and it was really interesting how back in the Mid-South, and this was 30 years ago, back in the Mid-South, they would pronounce his name Jim Dugan. And there's two G's in his name, so just phonetically it would sound like Dugan. But at the same time, they would say, Jim Dugan. And so ever since then, we would call him Dugan, and it's just absolutely funny. But Dugan is indeed the correct answer. And back to the Big Show and Sheamus segment.
Oh, the Big Show and Sheamus segment. Hey, and you want to know something about Team Canada when WCW? Why didn't they call it the CWO? I mean, you had the LWO and the whatever else. Yeah, I mean, why did that would have been great? Why didn't they do that? But anyway.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, with Big Show, yeah, he would turn that out. But anyway, so Sheamus comes out, turns into a Malie, but, you know, the Big Show, I don't want to see him in the Hall of Fame yet anyway. So well, for Seth McMahon to come out and do that, interrupt everything, it was just another silly segment on Raw. And, yeah, nobody would give that up, you know.
Yeah.
That was a good point to bring. Again, just trying to decimate Team Cena, trying to make the Authority look that much powerful. It worked in that regard, but a fan like me, I was just like, oh, what?
Yeah, exactly. What was Triple – next question. Other than John Paul Levesque, what other name did Triple H have in WCW? Other than John Paul Levesque – what other name did Triple H? How in the world? You know the drill, Derek. He just couldn't resist. You were doing good for so many questions, and then you couldn't resist. But that is the correct answer. Terror Rising. Interesting. It says I think kayfabe, the Hall of Fame will require you to be retired and or dead. That's my entire guess. Yeah. I mean, I can understand that, but at the same time, I think the interesting thing about it was he would be the only active member in the Hall of Fame. But even with the retirement, Ric Flair wrestled after the Hall of Fame, and that's really one of the only people. You can say Ric Flair. You can say everybody else who are, you know, trying to scrape pennies in the indie scenes that are in the Hall of Fame, like, you know, unfortunately, someone like Greg Valentine. It's quite sad. Terror Rising is the correct answer, so good job there. Next we have Brie Bella defeating Nikki Bella, but Nikki Bella was dressed as AJ, and actually looked a lot like AJ. That was pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, they're trying their best to really continue to this Nikki Bella and AJ feud. And I will say this: I would rather see Nikki Bella and AJ than Nikki and Brie, because Nikki and Brie was a disaster, and it continues to be a disaster. But at least they're using the Nikki and Brie feud not to be some big centralized feud of the Divas division, because it flopped, and it seems like the WWE has decided to count their losses and realize that it did flop. So the addition of AJ Lee and Nikki being in the match for the title, I'm okay with that, because I would much rather see that than more and more Nikki and Brie just by themselves.
Nikki and Brie, the chatty cats, you know, it seems like every time we talk about the Divas, we're trying to pull for reasons to like it. We're trying to really find ways to say the Diva division's worth watching and worth enjoying and looking at. And I can't find anything. Yeah, with Nikki dressed as AJ, I mean, that was fun spoof. But for the most part, again, it's just time filler. It's a waste, and it's, I almost flip over to Monday Night Football, and I hate to say that because I love Monday Night Raw, obviously. But there wasn't much going on in Monday Night Football either. However, with the Divas division still, you know, the Nikki and the Brie, it was a horrible thing. I mean, it's something that I don't know if they can ever dig themselves out of. I mean, are they just going all of a sudden up and become twin friends again? It just kind of leaves to each week's a different twist and turn, and again, no one really cares.
Yeah, and I think that we're in the bad thing about it is I think that we're going to see that. I think that eventually, to tie into some, you know, the next season of Total Divas that's supposed to come out in January, I really, really think that eventually they're going to be BFFs again. And so I'm just like, it's just, I just want it to end. I think the feud had so much potential, and it just utterly flopped. Absolutely. So next we have the main event, which was what was the last part of the show, was the contract signing. You had Team Authority out there, you know, and then Cena comes out and just cuts just some unbearable promo, sitting down and talking about each person on the list. You know, it was just a little bit extensive to me. And so my thing was, who's going to be on Team Cena? That was my biggest thing. Like, okay, well, hurry up. Who's going to be on your team? And the good news is that I did get, you know, I did see that they are doing something different. I'm cool with that. And Sheamus not being on the team, I'm not, you know, that I'm not upset with that at all. But Cesaro coming out and faking to be on the team, to me, that really seemed as if they were trying to just heat up the iron a little bit and see. It seemed like they were just trying to test the crowd to see if he was going to get a baby face reaction, to see if they really want to turn him face. Because otherwise, if it wasn't for that reason, there was no other alternative and reason that made sense. And so, yeah, just him coming out made absolutely no sense. But interestingly enough, I mean, of course, I think it was pretty inevitable that Ryback was going to join Team Cena because they were building around it. But Eric Rowan, now, I did think about that. I didn't give a lot of time to entertain the thought, but I did think about, I think it was like about this weekend or even last week, that it, wonder if Eric Rowan was on Team Cena as a babyface. I think, I like the idea though. I think Eric Rowan, if they decide to make, you know, if they would have made him a heel, I think that he would have been shrouded under Luke Harper. But the fact that they made him a babyface, it's different, and it's going to be a little awkward to see someone that looks like Eric Rowan to be a babyface. But I think it's a good idea to really see what they're going to do with Eric Rowan as a face. I don't think they're going to do much of anything. I don't think they're going to make a lot of investment in it. But at least he gets a main event spot as a face. So I'm cool with Eric Rowan being a part of it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pleasant surprise for an ending of Raw. And it's I didn't entertain the idea as much either. I don't even know if I did entertain it at all, so kudos to that. I almost thought for a second, maybe this is when Sting's going to come out.
Sting, wow.
Yeah, I almost did. It was something that was, because it was in a time, I'd have to watch it again. It was almost like a rap. It was like, we're in this ring for this thing. And I was thinking, here comes Sting. Or something, you know, but.
Wow.
And that would have been mind-blowing as well. But yeah, it's going to be interesting, and I kind of added a little bit extra to it that I'm anxious to see this match and see how it goes. I really am. So kudos to that. The end is on a high note, and like I said, the beginning wasn't that bad either. So I mean, it was typical Raw, but the Eric Rowan coming out and Luke Harper on the other side, it adds a little spice to it. I'm glad that they got that part right. I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I totally agree. Absolutely. The next question on the map. Now, this is a tough one. Now, we've got some people who knows their trivia, so this is going to be a tough one. What WCW event did Vader debut? What WCW event did Vader make his debut? And, of course, Derek, you can't say it yet, because I know that you'd like to ruin trivia questions. Of course, we know that the listeners get first dibs at trivia questions, and if no one knows, Derek then decide, you know, and then Derek will do it. So, we'll do it that way. But we are going to go right into the next section. We'll talk about Survivor Series starting in 1996. We'll talk about that, then we'll go into the predictions.
It is now time for the Flavor of the Week.
1996 had a bunch of matches that really kind of turned the tables and really defined the Attitude Era. You had Super Babyface Shawn Michaels with Jose Lothario against Psycho Sid, and then you had as far as the 4-on-4 matches, they none of them were really of worth other than the Furnace and LaFon match and Henry the Furnace LaFon and Goblins match against Owen, Bulldog, Marty Jannetty, and Leaf, Al Snow, Cassidy. That was a good, solid 20-minute match. And then you also had the Rock's debut in Survivor Series 1996. So that was a very monumental moment for the night. He actually won the match for Team Mero, which our prayers are with Team Mero. Our prayers with Mark Mero. He had a scare of possible heart surgery, but thankfully that the tests were negative and he doesn't need surgery. So thank God for that. But Mark Mero, Rocky Maivia, Jake Roberts, and the Stalker, which is Barry Windham, they defeated Goldust, Crush, Jerry Lawler, and Hunter Hearst Helmsley. So Rock made his debut then and won the match. And then Undertaker defeating Mankind, big feud with Undertaker and Mankind at the time. And Paul Bearer was like hanging in a cage above the arena. That was the stipulation there. And then and also you had Farouk and Vader, Razor, and Diesel defeating Flash Funk, Jimmy Snuka, Savio Vega, and Yokozuna. Actually, it was a no contest. It was less than 10-minute match, and it ended in a no contest. Interesting match there, but it was like a double. It was like a double DQ because they were just all brawling in the ring, and I think there was only a couple people eliminated, and then they just start brawling. And then Bret Hart and Stone Cold Steve Austin. It was the number one contendership for the WWE Championship, and Bret Hart won. And then, of course, Psycho Sid won the WWE Championship by defeating Shawn Michaels that night. So, it was a memorable 1996 Royal Rumble. It wasn't as captivating as all the other traditional Survivor Series, but there was certainly some memorable moments on the show.
It was memorable moments. I mean, he had a lot of people that were just starting out, and they ended up having pretty lucrative careers. Honestly, I think it was kind of a bummer of a Survivor Series. Not too much going on. I mean, Owen Hart, British Bulldog with Marty Jannetty and Lace Cassidy, like you mentioned, against the Godwins and Doug Furnace and Phil LaFont. I mean, the Bret Hart defeating the Stone Cold Steve Austin, that was like a precursor to what they were going to go up against in that coming on to WrestleMania 13 with the match with Ken Shamrock and everything. But anyway, from stemming off of that, it was a good typical pay per view. I mean, he had Jake Roberts for his final last gasp kind of with the WWE back in the mid late 90s. So it was a Survivor Series, but I wouldn't say it was too much.
Yeah, 97 was interesting. 97 was the year of just the factions. There were so many factions, just random factions in the WWE at 97. You had the Truth Commission and the DOA and Los Boricuas. They were, you know, big around that time. And it was just no faction. And then, of course, the Nation of Domination were big at the time, that time, too. And so, yeah, I mean, I think really the Nation of Domination were the only faction that did that really did something at the end. But New Age Outlaws and the Godwins defeat the Headbangers and the New Blackjacks. Truth Commission defeating the DOA. Thank God that match was only 10 minutes because it was rough. Team Canada defeating Team USA. That was a really good match. I remember watching that match, and it was really the opportunity to it was really the opportunity for Team Canada to shine because they were in Montreal, and of course we know we'll talk about what happened here later in the card, but the undercard to the biggest, the most controversial and the most talked about Survivor Series in WWE history, the undercard wasn't that impressive. The Road Warriors and Ahmed Johnson and Ken Shamrock, I remember that match when they defeated the Nation of Domination. I think that was a decent match. I think it was good to see the Road Warriors win because that was one of the only good moments of their latter WWE career. Their latter WWE career was just not good. They were booked so poorly. Steve Austin defeating Owen Hart to win the WWE Intercontinental Championship. Of course, we know, the complications that came with him winning the championship. And, of course, the infamous Montreal Screwjob, Shawn Michaels defeating Bret Hart.
Oh, yeah. Most controversial SummerSlam pay-per-view of all time. And who can forget about the Truth Commission? I mean, for crying out loud. That was, at their time, the best.
The Truth Commission makes me want to cry out loud.
It was not a good thing. It was definitely weird. But then again, you had the Montreal Screwjob. And you also had, like I said, the Owen Hart and Stone Cold Steve Austin. Well, that's where Austin hurt his neck. And remember the Owen Hart t-shirt, Owen 316, says, "I just broke your neck." I wish I could find one of those. And, I mean, I would love to have one of those t-shirts. It's Christmas time, pancakes and power slams. Give love to your hosts. But anyway, so, yeah, I mean, that was definitely Montreal Screwjob. I'm sure you've got a lot to say about her if we go on to a 98, but controversial end, everybody knows about it. I don't need to explain anything. It was something. It was one rowdy night.
Sure was. The correct answer is, do you know the correct answer to Vader's debut?
Was it called Battle Bowl, I think?
No, it was actually a Class of Champions, 1980.
Yeah,
Class of Champions, yeah. Yeah, he beat Tom Zink. He beat the Z-Man Tom Zink. Class of the Champions. I didn't know. I didn't say a pay-per-view. I said event. I didn't say pay-per-view. Aha. See? That's what happens when people don't listen. Let's get to Survivor Series 98 real quick before we close up and get the predictions. Daily Game Tournament. Just the Deadly Game Tournament participants was Mankind, Al Snow, Jeff Jarrett, Dwayne Gill, Austin, Boss Man, Steven Regal, Ken Shamrock, X-Pac, Goldust, The Rock, and Big Boss Man. Also, Undertaker and Kane, they were a part of it. And the final four was the quarterfinals and were Mankind, Al Snow, Undertaker, Kane, Rock, and Ken Shamrock. And then Mankind defeated Austin, and The Rock defeated The Undertaker by DQ. And then, of course, The Rock joined the Corporation and won the WWE Championship. Also on the card was the New Age Outlaws defeating D'Lo and Mark Henry. And also we had Val Venus. There was also Sable and Jacqueline. Sable won the Women's Championship that night too. But it was mostly revolved around The Rock winning the WWE Championship and joining the corporation.
Yeah, again, it was 1990. It was in the heat of the Attitude Era, and, of course, The Rock won his due. You had a lot of matches that night. I remember that. It was like, how many matches are they going to have? It was a ton of them. I think almost like 20-some matches. But
it was a lot of them.
It wasn't your traditional Survivor Series, but it was okay, and I got what they were doing with it. So overall, it was good. Like I said, it was kind of a who's who of the Attitude Era at the time.
Yeah, real quick, we only got a few minutes left. I want to squeeze these in right quick. 99 was not a traditional Survivor Series match. It was only the 2-4-4 matches. The Mean Street Posse losing to Blackman, Gangrel, Mark Henry, Val Venus, and British Bulldog. Kurt Angle defeating Sean Stasiak. That was one of his defining moments at the beginning of his career. He was feuding with Stasiak and Steve Blackman. I think it was the only way he was feuding with Godfather D'Lo, defeating the Dudleys and the Acolytes. That was the other 4-4. Kane defeating X-Pac by DQ. A tag team match. May, Moolah, Tori, and Deborah defeating Ivy, Luna, Jackie, and Terry. For some reason, China defeating Chris Jericho. I couldn't stand that. It was made me absolutely sick. Too Cool and the Hollies defeating Edge and Christian Hardys. And then Al Snow and Mankind losing to the New Age Outlaws. And Big Show defeating Triple H and The Rock to win the WWE Championship that night.
Yeah, it wasn't really, it was different. It wasn't that great of a SummerSlam, honestly, for 1999. So
Survivor Series. Survivor Series.
Yeah. So, that's what it was.
Yeah. Real quick, let's see here. The 2000, real quick, we had Steve Austin and Triple H in no contest. And then the championship match was Kane defeating The Undertaker in 2000. Very interesting. Kurt Angle defeating The Undertaker. The Dudleys and the Hardys defeating Edge and Christian and Righteous Censor. Rock defeating Rikishi. I did it for The Rock. Ivory and Lita. Ivory keeps her title. Radicals defeats DX. Steve Blackman Crash and Molly defeating TNA, and Kane defeating Chris Jericho. William Regal defeating Hardcore Holly. All right, real quick, let's go. Team Fox against Team Page. Which one?
Team Page.
Yes, I agree. Team Page. The four-way tag team match. Golden Stardust, Usos, Los Matadores, The Miz, Damian Mizdale.
Gold Stardust.
Yes, I agree. I've got a controversy. I don't think we're going to see a clean finish from Ambrose and Bray.
I don't either. They can't afford it.
Yeah, I've got AJ defeating Nikki Bella.
Yep.
Team Cena versus Team Authority.
I'm going to say the Authority.
I've got them too. I've got the Authority winning as well, and then Fandango's coming back to be in the pre-show match. We don't know who he's going to wrestle yet, but he'll
I can't
be back
wait.
With Rosa. I'm sure you can. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. We are wrestling.net stream. Thank you so much. Follow at Crave Wrestling until next week. Enjoy Survivor Series. We'll see you next week. Daddy loves Elijah, and God bless. Have a good night. Goodbye.